Welcome to Chair Chat, an online web series hosted by me, Jamie Harrison, the chairman of the South Carolina Democratic Party. Our goal in this series is to begin to look at political leaders, activists, and people involved in politics in a three-dimensional manner. We will move past the political caricatures to get to know the individual. So now, let's chat. We have an interesting guest today on Chair Chats, a man you rarely see since he tries to stay out of the spotlight. Yet, as chief of staff to one president, Bill Clinton, and head of the transition team for another, Barack Obama, he's been a strategic force behind many important decisions. Then, when he left the White House, he established a very active progressive think tank called the Center for American Progress. Now he's back with Hillary Clinton's campaign, so I'm pleased to have caught the very elusive John Podesta. John, welcome to Chair Chats.
Jamie, it's great to be here. It's an honor to be in the rocking chair.
Well, it's good to have you here in South Carolina drinking some lemonade. And we have to make sure that we tell Tony about this. As you know, I work with your brother, Tony Podesta. Yeah. And I don't know, maybe one day I can get him to sit in the rocking chair and have some lemonade. Well, listen, here on Chair Chats, we love to talk about, what's going on in your personal life, all of the various things, and then we talk a little politics as well. You were raised in Chicago. I know that Secretary Clinton is a devoted Cubs fan. I know President Barack Obama, is a big White Sox fan. So the big question is, John, who do you root for?
Well, it's funny, Jamie, my father grew up downtown in the old Italian tenements, so he was a White Sox fan. And then I went to high school, and Tony went to high school, really right down the block from Wrigley Field.
Yeah.
So we were kind of Cubs fans, but we grew up learning to always be disappointed. So right now I'm rooting for the Washington Nationals, who are really underperforming in their division.
It sounds like even back then you and Tony were very good politicians. knowing that your grandparents were immigrants, right, from Italy.
My father's family is from Italy. My mother's family is from Greece.
What are your thoughts on the current immigration rhetoric that's coming out of the Republican Party now?
It's extreme, awful, and I think if you imagine a family sitting at home listening to that on television, I think it started with Trump, but they've all kind of chimed in, and variations on a theme. Demonization, again, Trump probably is at the height of that, but at the end of the day, when you look at what their prescriptions are, they make you feel like there's no place for people who are working hard, trying hard, contributing to their communities. And, I grew up, I was born in 1949, but when my dad grew up, that's what greeted, Italian immigrants. They're called names. It stays with you and has a real effect on people's sense of belonging in this country. So I wish they'd cut it out, but I don't think they will. I don't know why they think that politics works for them, but they're sticking with it.
It's really shameful. I mean, it makes me, with this whole thought about the 14th Amendment and repealing the 14th Amendment, and I just think back to, and I'm sure your grandparents, when they came over, if they came through New York, I mean, the quote that's on the Statue of Liberty, give me your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. And so that's what America is all about, and this idea that you were going to repeal the 14th Amendment. It just seems crazy to me.
Yeah, and punish kids. I just don't know where that's coming from other than a politics of hate, which they're pretty good at, I guess. But, I think in the long run, the American people are a little more sensible. And you see that in the polling, which I think rejects that. As a population as a whole sees a rejection of that, but I guess they're playing to their base and playing to their primary constituencies.
Well, I hope the American people see that it is clearly just un-American.
Yeah.
That is totally counter to what we are.
We saw the politics in California flip over on issues like this when Pete Wilson tried to run that play way back when. Yeah. And I think, you know, unless they can make an adjustment and say that, you know, people who are working hard and paying their taxes and trying to get ahead in life have a place at the table, then I think they're, you know, in the long run, that's not just, you know, bad behavior, but I think it's bad politics, yeah, too.
Well, tell me about your time as a chief of staff. I mean, I think most people, you know, they hear White House chief of staff, but they really don't have a sense of what does a chief of staff do. Now, I sort of imagine, you know, you're constantly sitting at the desk on the phone and somebody's calling me and you're like, okay, no, what's wrong now? What can I do to fix it? So tell us a little bit about what you do as chief of staff to a president.
Look, you know, all the easy decisions never get to the White House. The chief of staff has a counterpart, the national security advisor, who's like attending more, I think, to the foreign policy. Chief of staff is running all the domestic policy, politics, etc. The staff is, by given the size of the government and the nature of the issues, relatively small. There are about 400 people in the White House staff, but you're principally spending your time doing is working with the other senior members to try to serve up decisions to the president that fit into a strategic framework about what opportunities there are, what the president wants to get done, what he or maybe she mm-hmm. has promised to the American people. How do you move forward with that? And one of the things that you know, I had a reputation for was to think about all of the tools that the president had, not just dealing with Capitol Hill, which these days is really kind of, you know, you have to have a cast iron stomach to have to deal with the leadership up there on the Republican side. But also, there's just the president has immense convening power. He's got a lot of executive authority. There's things you can do under the statutes that have been passed by the Congress. And so organizing the president to prioritize, to get that done, to run through the whole government, to get decision making flowing up to the president, is the way you spend your time. Mostly, I think, with other members of the senior White House staff, the president and the cabinet secretaries. Yeah. So it's a lot, you know, it's a lot of fun.
So when you were chief of staff, what was the hardest task or the hardest fight that you had? That you had as chief of staff?
My guy got impeached, so that was...
But you won.
But we won. He was acquitted. you know, really, I think that was a political exercise from my perspective, and it was fairly easy to fight back on. I think the hardest things you always have to do is when the president's making a decision that really is committing U.S. servicemen and women to combat. During my tenure, we did the intervention in the war in Kosovo. I was around for, you know, Bosnia. There were other smaller uses of force that took place, including bombing Saddam Hussein when we were in 1998. Whenever you're committing troops and you're committing the country to using its immense military force, those are the decisions I think that weigh on you a lot. When I was with President Obama, we were, you know, working through, and he was trying to establish with his National Security Council and Chairman of the Joint Chiefs what we were going to do in Iraq and Syria, particularly to push back ISIS. Those are tough decisions because you know that, you know, you're putting people in harm's way, and that has tremendous consequence.
Well, you know, you have a unique experience in that you worked for President Clinton when there was a Republican Congress, mm-hmm. and you've now worked for Barack Obama in a Republican Congress. Was it this time around, is it as bad as it was during the Clinton administration, or have things gotten worse in Washington, D.C. in terms of working with this with a Republican Congress?
You know, it was it was no picnic back then, mm-hmm. but I think the level of animosity towards the president that's personal, and the rejectionism of the leadership up there of the Republican members is actually, I think it's worse, actually.
Do you have any idea why you think it's?
You know, I used to think back in our day, Newt Gingrich was a radical, mm-hmm. leading a caucus that was made up of some moderates, spectrum of individuals. In the Senate, there were a lot more people who were used to making deals, who had been part of the Senate when deal making was was the regular order of the day. Now what you have, I think, is the leadership being led by really a kind of radical caucus. I mean, you worked up there, but I think it's the introduction of the Tea Party, the shift to the right, the inability of the leadership to actually do things, I think, that they think are even sensible. We talked about immigration earlier. Yeah. You know, I think John Boehner actually wanted to do comprehensive immigration reform with Barack Obama, but there was just no way he could get the radical members of his caucus to go along with him.
Yeah, it's an amazing shift when the Speaker of the House no longer has the clout in order to get things done in the Congress. I don't think we've ever seen this in American history. And it's sort of, as someone who loves the institution, it's really, really sad to see it denigrate to that point. Well, we also know that you are very strong in terms of environmental issues. And people see you as an environmentalist and someone who loves the planet and fights very hard to protect it. Lately, what's been in the discussion is the Keystone Pipeline. Just recently, I think Secretary Clinton came out opposing Arctic drilling. As a student in the environment, what are your thoughts about how, if Secretary Clinton becomes President Clinton, how she gets strong environmental policy through this Congress?
It's challenging, but I think it's possible. Mm-hmm. First of all, I went back to the White House with President Obama to run the climate and energy program, and I think we had a lot of success over the last couple of years. And he's really made this part of the most important things I think that he's trying to get done to deal with climate change. Finalized the Clean Power Plan, which I worked on when I was in the White House, which is going to have a dramatic effect on how we produce energy in this country, moving towards more clean, renewable energy. And I think Hillary is trying to build on that by setting two important goals for the country. One is to install 500 million solar cells by the end of her first term, and second, to install enough renewable energy in 10 years to power every home in America. It'd be about a third of all the electricity produced. Those are big goals, but they're backed up with specific policy, some of which I think she can do on her own, mm-hmm. some of which will need congressional support. But I think the pieces that need congressional support are areas where there is some Republican interest. For example, tax credits for wind and solar. There is still a remaining. There's some opposition now forming on the Republican side. There's certainly the know-nothing climate denier caucus in the House and Senate. But people who have seen the introduction and installation of a lot of renewable energy, people who now see that it's actually extremely cost-effective in 20 of the 30 major cities in the country. The cost of installed rooftop solar is actually lower than grid power. Mm-hmm. So I think that there's the ability to try to shape policy that can make the right investments to help solve the climate problem. I don't see the Republicans on Capitol Hill embracing the climate challenge per se, but I think they have the potential to go along with some ideas and some policies that will build out. These are going to be the industries of the future. These are where jobs are. So, you know, you even see in the Midwest where, you know, you still see a lot of Republican support for wind power. You see increasing support for solar power. And so I think that's where the opportunity lies. But I come back to something I said earlier. If they refuse to do anything, the president has a lot of authority to still move the process forward. And that's what President Obama's done. And I think he's done a great job. And he's done a great job at the international level by getting the joint agreement with the Chinese that, you know, I worked on, exactly. that was announced in Beijing to push the Chinese to do more, to push the Indians to really get more robust about building out solar power there. This is an all-in proposition. If we're gonna begin to deal with the worst effects of climate change, which are going to be substantial, we're going to have to get both private sector, public sector, but internationally, we're going to have to get every country involved.
Yeah.
Well, you know, John, you have there are a lot of folks on the Hill and in the D.C. circles who sort of see you as the Olivia Pope for Democratic politics, that you fix it. And you know, one of the issues you get in Benghazi talk and I'm sad to say that one of my guys down here in South Carolina is leading that effort. You also have the talks about the server and the emails and all. How do we just close this chapter so that we can move on and focus on the things that are really important?
We're working on it. It's I think a combination of the Republican attacks coming from the Hill, the attacks coming from the candidate side, from the super PAC side. Combined with the press's obsession with this, means that we're just going to have to kind of work our way through it. But the basic facts, I think at the end of the day, will come out. I think the American public's fair-minded, and fundamental to that is that she didn't send any classified information. She didn't receive anything marked as classified. And when I think people actually see the contents of these emails, you know, some of them will come up now, including, you know, the fact that she didn't know how to use a fax machine and she wanted to give me advice about wearing warm socks. I think I think that smoke will blow away. Now, the Republicans won't stop attacking us. You know, Gowdy, there have been already 7 Benghazi investigations. They've all found that certainly she didn't do anything wrong. And while it's a tragedy and people learn from it, and new policy had to be implemented, it's just that. It was a tragedy for brave Americans who lost their lives. But sort of going forward, I don't see, Congressman Gowdy turning the thing off. He's figured out a way to stretch it through 2015. I'm sure they'll figure out a way to stretch it through as much of 2016 as they can. But I think public will probably come to see increasingly that this is a political effort as opposed to a legitimate inquiry about what happened. I mean, they don't even talk about Benghazi anymore. So, ostensibly, that's what this investigation is about.
Gowdy's effort to try to get a Supreme Court appointment, but I'm sorry if Donald Trump's the nominee. I don't think that's happening.
God only knows we could speculate about who Donald Trump would want to put on.
Well, listen, you are, we know you're the fixer, but you are also a heck of a chef. Tony talks about your cooking. You cook all the time for politicos in D.C. So, you know, my big question is, Hillary Clinton is elected president. Do you go in as chief of staff or chief chef?
I think maybe I'll apply for sous chef. I don't know. I don't think they probably let me handle that.
But how did you start cooking, and where did that love?
Yeah, our mom worked at night, and my father worked in a factory during the day. And so I ended up kind of finishing off dinner. Tony's 5 years older than me, so he was out on the street corner someplace getting in trouble. And so I started cooking for the family. So by the time I left Chicago and went to college. I was the only person who knew anything about cooking. And then, you know, it's become something that I do. So I tried that. I tried to ply the press corps at the beginning of the campaign with some good cooking. They liked the cooking. It didn't seem to have much effect.
Maybe you just need
it's
multiple dinners. I think they wanted another set of invitations to come.
I think we'll have to, you know, pack up little, you know, exactly, Tupperware containers and send it out to them.
Exactly.
Well, I also read that you rode a bus to New York City. So it just kind of blew my mind.
You know, the campaign is trying to build out really a grassroots campaign. We're doing, I think, very well here under Clay Middleton's leadership, and really try to cut expenses where we can so that we can invest in building out really a strong grassroots and social media campaign across the country. So one of the things that we started in on was, you know, reducing travel costs as much as possible. And people started taking the bus back and forth from Washington to New York. So I figured if everybody else can do it, I could do it. So I've actually, you know, now become a regular on the bus. I don't get to Washington as much as I thought I would. So my wife is a little angry about that. But I'm mostly in New York. But when I do go back and forth, sometimes I take the train if it's like rush hour.
So now there's a seat that says John Podesta, and you got your neighbor who's like, oh, hey, John, how are you?
I meet people on the bus.
Last question I have. Again, you've worked with Hillary Clinton. You're working with Hillary Clinton now. You work with Bill Clinton. You work with Barack Obama. What quality do you like most in each one of them? Is there a unique quality that you think that most people might not even know about, but you've been able to see?
Let me start with Bill Clinton. I'll work backwards.
Yeah.
Bill Clinton has the ability to see laterally across the landscape. He knows of something about everything and brings to bear that knowledge on problems like somebody I've never seen. You know, a lot of people can drill deep down on a problem. But President Clinton could say, you know, when I was governor of Arkansas, I took a trip to, you know, Florida, and somebody was doing X, and that has relevance to the problem that we're confronting now in 2009. I've actually never met anybody who could do that like he can. And that makes it a lot of fun to work with him. He's also, you know, really fun guy, as you know.
Yeah.
And President Obama I describe this. It maybe makes it sort of, I don't know whether it be meaningful to people. He has a combination of caution and boldness that also, it's very, very, very rare.
Yeah.
So he wants to see where he can get before he takes the first couple of steps, but then he's audacious in trying to get there if he sees where he's going. And, you know, so he will take tremendous risk as long as he knows that there's a chance you're going to get to this.
It's like a great running back. You see that hole.
He looks for that hole, but he doesn't, you know, he won't jump off when everybody else is saying, come on, do it. And he'll resist that, and he has a lot of just self, you know, awareness about that and self-confidence about that. And Hillary, I think the thing that people probably don't see as much in her as I do is how genuinely passionate as a person she is, how she keeps her friendships going, how she in this campaign, how she dives deep into the lives of the people that she's meeting and listening to, and really trying to crank through and figure out, you know, how am I going to make a difference? What's, you know, what is going to matter to people? But she gets to know people, I think, in a really deep sense, and then she's, you know, if somebody gets sick, if somebody, you know, has a hard time, something, she's the first to call, which you wouldn't, you know, yeah. I don't think the public really recognizes that error, but she has really a deep heart that I think sometimes on a campaign trail doesn't cut.
I think we saw a glimpse of that in our interview with her when she was here on Chair Chats, when she was talking about just some of the issues, the racial issues that young African Americans have to deal with. And you saw that passion and that heartbeat in that discussion. Well, John, I have really enjoyed sitting down with you. It's great to have you here
great
in the rocking chair.
Great to see you in South Carolina.
Exactly. And I hope that you will be here quite often. You know, you always have a home here in the Palmetto State. So Thank you again for being on Chair Chats.
And thank you. You're always welcome on Chair Chats. On the next Chair Chats.
You know, the people that vote against their interests more than any other people? Stock market investors. I don't understand. I cannot understand why anybody has a penny in the stock market would be a Republican.